Welcome to Red Inca. I'm Jared Kimber.
This episode of Red Inca, we talk about cricket in London with someone who runs a charity to get more people playing the sport there. We talk about club cricket, race, class, schools, and removing fences.
My name is Chris Willett, and I'm the CEO of a charity called Platform Cricket, which works across most of central London. And we're a charity which aims to bring more children and young people into cricket, particularly from disadvantaged backgrounds and ethnic minority backgrounds. And not just interested in kind of creating cricketers, but also supporting young people in London with their kind of personal and social development through cricket. We've developed this program over the last 5 years. It was born out of a program, a much wider sporting program that we started in Tower Hamlets in East London. And you may know that Tower Hamlets is really at the wrong end of all of the stats that kind of might be barriers for young people getting into sport. So it's kind of biggest non-white British population in the UK, so some cultural issues, highest levels of child poverty, so certainly some financial issues, smaller things like kind of lowest car ownership. Now it's got the biggest population density, really high population churn, so lacking in volunteers. So all of the kind of innovative ways we had to go about trying to address and prepare the equivalents of sports clubs for young people in those areas, including cricket at that point, is really the sort of, well, the learning from it is what we've poured into what is now Platform Cricket. And Platform Cricket has sort of exploded really over the last 5 years. We now work around 16 inner London boroughs, not across all of those boroughs, across four or five of them. Others just the sort of most disadvantaged parts of them. But there's a sort of imbalance really. So the operational stuff is going very well. It's very popular. It starts with kind of work in schools. So we sort of plant seeds with kind of 8 and 9 year old children in schools. And then unlike a lot of other programs, we create a community session, which is trying to replicate what a cricket club might do locally for those young people. It's usually in a public park and it's just trying to remove all the barriers, really. It's free. It's very local. As I say, we work hard with schools to try and be really proactive about trying to get kids into it. But the imbalance is really around the funding. So it's okay about getting the funding for the on the ground stuff, you know, the operational stuff. Growing the charity's core, you know, the administration part of it and the management stuff at the same rate to be able to cope with this kind of great need and great expansion has been more difficult. We get all of our money from trusts and foundations, a little bit from local authorities as well. Disappointed, we get zero money from cricket at the moment, so there's no cricket bodies, BCB or any of the county boards or any of the associated charities or whatever who we have any partnerships with in terms of finances. We obviously try to work with them collaboratively around what we do in certain areas, but that's something we're trying to address. But yeah, other than that, it's kind of fundraising campaigns. We've actually got one open at the moment. And if any of your listeners would like to kind of chip into that, if they look on our Twitter feed, which is Platform LDN1, that's Platform PLATFORMLDN1, they'll see a link to a big give campaign, which is really good actually, because there's an organisation in London called the Childhood Trust who match any funds. So for every pound that we get, they add a pound in as well. So it's really useful to us that.
HCL Tech brings you this show, and they're the only ones who love data, well, more than I do.
Looking for a fun way to win 25 times your money this football and basketball season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of stats, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and injury insurance on your picks are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million players who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/play100 and use code PLAY100. That's code PLAY100 at prizepicks.com/play100 for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy.
And what's your background in cricket?
So my background, you might have got a little bit from my accent. I'm not from London originally. I'm from the West Midlands, which I guess has some similarity with London in it being a kind of urban, multicultural sort of area. And so some of my experiences there have certainly helped shape what we do now. But I played junior cricket in Worcestershire. I played for a very, at that point anyway, a very good cricket club called Old Hill, who've won the national knockout a few times. So I sort of had a ground in there, played bits of rep cricket, played some minor county cricket for Herefordshire, Midlands Club Cricket Conference cricket when that was still going. Played abroad a couple of times also. I played a season in South Africa, a season in New Zealand. When I was in South Africa, that wasn't too long post-apartheid, so some really interesting experiences there about kind of positive action. And I did sort of half of my week in the township, half of my week in the local high school. So yeah, that was a real eye-opener for a pretty green 18-year-old from the Midlands. But yeah, moved to London for work in 2004-2005, and I moved to a club called Blackheath in South East London, and a very long story short, I was captain there for 12 years, and we had a lot of success. Actually, we won the Premier League, and we won the national knockout ourselves there. Had some good sides, helped a few players go on to play some professional cricket as well. So yeah, from a playing perspective, I've had a grounding. In terms of my work, it started much more broadly around sport. So I did that in the Midlands, and then when I moved to this job in Tower Hamlets, which was multi-sport, it's kind of sort of narrowed down into cricket over the years. And platform cricket started in 2018. So a guy called Daniel Bell Drummond, who plays at Kent, I think very unlucky not to have played for England yet, but I'm a bit biased. He's from Lewisham originally, and we sort of got to thinking about how we could address some of the issues that there were in South East London and Lewisham in particular. Certainly parts of Lewisham are a cricketing backwater, really. Haven't always been the case, of course. You know, was a time when there was a lot more clubs in central London and central South East London, and there was obviously a period where British West Indies cricket was thriving, and South London obviously benefited from that. But it's a very different picture now. So we used some of what we had learned from Tower Hamlets, and we basically applied it to areas of Lewisham. So we started our very first project in Deptford. That was the very first platform cricket project. And we worked with about 15 primary schools there. Saw some really talented kids. Did a few competitions and things as well to grease the wheels, but essentially started a community session in Deptford Park, and got kids their first sort of taste of community cricket. And some of those kids have gone on into established clubs. That isn't the only outcomes we were interested in for them, but some of them thankfully have done that. And we're seeing a little seam of kids who haven't had a great presence in local club cricket starting to become a greater presence in club cricket. And certainly around South East London, where the programme, South East and East London, where the programme's has sort of had its origins, we see a much greater diversity of kids in local club cricket in terms of their ethnic backgrounds anyway. And there's still some work to do on better gender parity, but certainly in terms of socioeconomics and ethnicity, we're seeing a much greater representation of kids in club cricket than we were 10 years ago.
I mean, so I brought one of my kids down to a major club in Southeast London, and it was very white and middle class, and yeah. A lot of Range Rovers and Land Rovers, yeah. A lot of Rovers in general. And they started playing platform cricket at school through your program, and then there was a free session. I was like, well, if I don't have to pay for it, I'll send them to another coaching session once a week. And they loved your one so much more than they did playing proper cricket. Part of it is, you know, coaches and everything else.
Yeah.
But what I loved is the backgrounds. Like, you have a look at these players, and there's so many parents who come from non-English speaking backgrounds, who come from non-traditional cricket backgrounds. And when I grew up in Melbourne, you know, we had so many parents who had never played cricket, didn't speak English as their first language, but their kids played cricket. And I come to London, and everyone who plays cricket in London is, you know, either middle-class English person, maybe a couple of West Indians, or they're expats from Australia, New Zealand, South Africa. And then the Asian community, it doesn't have that. You don't see, you know, Polish people playing and you know, Sudanese people playing and all those sorts of things. That's obviously what you noticed as well, right? And what you're really trying to capture is making cricket a game for all, whereas maybe over a long period of time in the UK, it has really been a game for just a couple of, you know, key demographics, and it sort of faded away from even some of the other strongholds that it used to have.
Yeah, I think that's right. So I suppose the first thing to say is, you know, I mean, I want to be clear that we don't and wouldn't criticise any of the clubs around Central London, because frankly, they get to capacity with the kids who walk through the door. They tend to be the demographic that you've described, you know, middle class upwards, quite a lot of privately educated kids. But clubs have to function, and, you know, they set out subs, and they haven't necessarily got the means to go out and stick these tentacles out into communities that haven't been well represented in their clubs. So it's not of anybody's particular fault. I think in terms of what you've said about sort of what we've tried to do, I think so when I first moved to work in East London, and our work's always been sort of rooted in schools, there was this really good program actually about kids going on to university and sort of breaking the cycle in families. You know, it was a sort of thing in generations of families where if the parents hadn't gone to university, the kids didn't go to university. And I think how we've tried to look at it in cricket is much in the same way, and it's pretty much what you've described. In London in particular, you find that is true, that, you know, if a parent hasn't had an involvement, or perhaps sometimes if a family just doesn't happen to live on the same road as the cricket club or very close by, these are the sort of strong factors which influence whether a kid gets into something or not. So we have had to break that down. I think what's worth saying as well is some of these things are peculiar to London. And I think if you, it's actually quite interesting. I won't go into it too much today, but, you know, if you delve into the sort of social history of sport in the UK, there's a lot of what is pretty obvious, which are some of the reasons that the status is what it is. So where I'm from in the West Midlands, we had league cricket 200 years ago. You know, it was factory v factory, town v town. So very early on, it was a meritocracy. People didn't care so much where you came from, and I'm sure this is your experience in Australia as well. People didn't care so much where you came from or what your sort of social background was. If you could bat a ball well, somebody wanted you to play in their team. I think in London, so I mentioned my club, Blackheath, you know, they've only been playing league cricket here since the 70s. So there was still, not too long ago, this kind of cabal of mates who played together, and okay, you know, I'm sure they still wanted to win as much as anybody, but there wasn't quite the kind of meritocracy that there was in other parts of the country. So I think you've got this kind of thing in London in particular that's been a hangover from that, and we're only just beginning to shed it a little bit now. And I think the other thing to say is there's a greater proportion of kids in London who are privately schooled as well. You know, a bigger percentage of those are state educated kids, and it's all a bit more mixed out in the provinces a bit too.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt, even if you go to test venues in the UK, the London venues are very, very different in the way they support cricket. Yeah. Then Edgbaston is certainly one, but even, you know, Trent Bridge, and when you go up further north, even more so. So it is really a London thing, and I don't think a lot of international fans would understand how kind of little cricket is involved in London anymore, how hard it is for, I mean, you talk about those clubs before, how hard it is for some of those clubs to find grounds. The area that I live in, every single cricket ground seems to be owned by a bank or was once owned by a bank, which means there aren't a lot of places that you can actually play. And even if you want to start up a cricket club with your friends, it would take a lot of information, a lot of understanding the local area to get this done. So there's a lot going on from that point of view. So London is different, but the overall problem is still the same, as we see with especially with the West Indian, the children and grandchildren now of the West Indian immigration just aren't going to cricket. So I was working in a cricket thing the other day, and the makeup person said to me, "Oh, my grandfather would be so happy that I'm working in cricket."
Yeah.
And she said, "But none of us really like cricket. My parents don't like cricket and I don't like cricket." And they'd grown up over here. And of course, her grandfather had grown up in Jamaica.
Yeah.
There's a legitimate disconnect. And I think in your testimony, to the government, and this was, I think you wrote this in 2019, and you know, I know things have changed very sharply of recent times, but there was a 75% decline in black players over the last 25 years. Like, that is, it's such a staggering stat, and there's so many that you could pull out of this as well. And you know, it's not quite the case now that England cricket is automatically captained by someone from Eton or Harrow or anything else, so there are positives that have moved forward in English cricket. But when you hear a number like that, you have to wonder what was actually happening. And I think that's a big part of your drive, isn't it? That, you know, you want to see those numbers get rectified again.
Yeah, I think that's right. So I think in terms of Afro-Caribbean participation, it is, so there's a few things. I think definitely it's been declined in lots of urban areas, and I think that there's the obvious things you can blame around that. Certainly the growth of the explosion of football with the onset of the Premier League and the encroachment of that into the summer is definitely a thing. Certainly for anybody from any background, but certainly if you're from a more disadvantaged background, the law or something that might be better off for you economically is definitely a draw. So I think there's part of that. I think the other thing which you can't ignore in terms of Afro-Caribbean participation in the UK is that the population is much more Afro than it is Caribbean. And so we work with kids around central London. I've been in some schools today, actually, around Brixton, and they're East African and West African, and they're Eritrean, they're Somali, they're from places where there isn't any cricketing heritage. And I think cricket has been guilty of trying to cut a few corners, really, and not recognise that you've got to start from scratch with these kids. It's not necessarily just about kind of reigniting fires about the 70s, the West Indies team of the 70s and 80s. Mm. It's about recognizing, actually looking a bit deeper about who these kids are and starting from scratch with them, and you could really start from scratch. And also recognizing that you're going to have to spend a bigger cost per head to develop a kid like that, a kid from Deptford or Woolwich or Elephant and Castle, it might be, it's going to cost a little bit more money than if you do wait for a kid to roll out of a private school at 18 years old who's probably already made cricketer. And I think one of cricket's major problems has been that there's very little motive for that. So, yes, of course, I don't think there's many people around who, in terms of the social justice part of it, wouldn't want there to be absolute parity between those two sets of kids. But when you look at other sports, so I'll give you an interesting little diversion of a tale. I happened to be in West Africa 2 or 3 years ago, and I was in Guinea-Bissau, believe it or not, and I went to watch a football match on a Saturday afternoon. And the three major football clubs in Guinea-Bissau are Sporting, Porto and Benfica, and they're called that because they're bankrolled by those three clubs in Portugal. And I got to thinking, why do these clubs actually kind of put this money into Guinea-Bissau? And of course, there's a little bit of sort of positive PR, but the main reason is they only need to find somebody there every 10 years who's going to be a good player they can sell on, and it's worth their while financially as well. And I think the cricket's problem is, firstly, we don't have a top to bottom sort of league structure, if you like. So there's no real jeopardy. If a county club isn't pulling its weight in terms of its talent ID or even kind of commercially, the worst that's going to happen is they're going to be in Div 2 for a few years. It's not really that big a thing. And of course, no transfer system. So there's no real financial incentive to get it right either. And if you think about it, cricket is the only sport where that is the case, where we have this county system rather than a kind of individual club system. And I think that makes it that puts a lot of pressure on people wanting to get the kind of equity, the social equity side of it right. And clearly that just hasn't been a strong enough motive for a long time.
Remember that cricket is a funny game. 100 years before we protected our heads, players looked after their groins. So don't be as stupid as old cricketers and protect your computer today. NordVPN is the protection I use when facing cyber shortfalls or when rights issues try to dismiss me. NordVPN will help you get through the straight bat of any geo blocks so you can watch all the cricket you want. If you need your pitch changed, well, NordVPN can doctor any surface to a new location so that your IP address is set up for you to win. Want to buy an associate cricket shirt from a place that won't ship to your country? Select NordVPN. Want to watch a game on a free stream in another hemisphere? NordVPN. Or if you just want to watch a clip on social media that a cricket board won't allow you to, promote NordVPN to pinch it for you. So if you need a VPN, go Nord. Use nordvpn.com/Kimber to get a huge discount off your NordVPN plan, plus 4 additional months for free. It's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. The link is in the show notes. Protect your computer like a cricketer protects its nether region with NordVPN today. Well, I think also, if you look at the county system, I mean, we're talking about London. Middlesex have issues, I think, financially, would be fair to say, and that's the main team north of the river. The main team south of the river has finally got its act together and is obviously doing very well. But for a long time, Surrey let a lot of very talented players, they didn't even develop them. They would go off and be successful at other teams, and then Surrey would overpay them to bring them back. So, you know, it didn't even work within the county system of the way that it could have, you know. And so there's a lot of very, you know, big differences there. How many kids do you have at the moment? I went to one of your sessions the other day and it's an absolute truckload. It feels like every time I go back, you have more kids involved than the last time I see.
Yeah. So obviously there's sort of different numbers really. So as I said, our work starts in school. So obviously, because it's a sort of captive one, so we see a lot of kids in schools. So we're projecting this year, so this academic year, 23-24, we'll see about 20,000 kids in schools, which I think makes us the biggest sort of single deliverer of kind of cricket, schools cricket, in terms of the numbers that we see. I might be wrong about that. So we see a lot of kids. And it's probably around 10% of that we get through to community cricket. So we would have, based on previous year's stats, we should see about kind of 2,000 children coming into community participation next summer. But of course, when I say community participation, it's not necessarily into a sort of a proper cricket route. That's into our sessions in parks.
Yeah.
And there's still going to be a few barriers between what we do and a proper kind of cricket club route. And of course, there's great swathes of London still where there isn't really a pathway at all. So, you know, Lambeth and Tower Hamlets and Westminster, these are places where there isn't a cricket club. Yet there's pretty big populations in them, you know. Even actually, equivalent, two London boroughs is generally the equivalent of some of the smaller counties' populations, you know, yet there's not a single club, let alone a professional club. So, there's still lots of physical barriers. But yeah, we see a lot of young people. We don't have the resources to do everything we would like to with them, of course, you know. So some areas we can only afford to kind of run a summer program. Some areas we do find a little bit more money from a local funder, which enables us to do it year round. And there's some areas where what we do could be a great sort of platform, pardon the pun, to kind of go into older age groups and continue it and kind of really take kids on into hardball cricket. What we do is really still at the sort of taster end of stuff and the kind of core sort of proficiency skills to enable those kids to, if they can and if the system allows them to get into it. It's not something we delve into as much as we'd like to.
Obviously, you know, I think I was going to talk to you before the ICAC report came out, and then, you know, that has come out since then, and it's been, I don't know why, controversial. As someone who comes from Australia, it was some of the first things I ever came across was the things that are in the ICAC report, and yet so many people still seem to be fighting what is a very obvious issues within the game.
Yeah.
You're on the coalface of this. What, you know, were you involved in the ICAC report at all? You know, have you gone through it? What are your sort of thoughts on, as someone who's kind of, you know, right there beside it?
Yeah, so we weren't consulted about it. Some of our staff actually have, in their playing days, because we have a lot of staff who are ex-professional players. So some of our staff in their playing days have been involved with some of the quite controversial stuff at the professional level. Not now, obviously, what I'm talking about when they were players. So there's some little overlap there. I mean, in terms of the sort of content of the report, I think you're right. I think a lot of it was quite obvious stuff. I think most people would agree that actually, even though they shouldn't happen at all, the way things sort of explode at the surface into the isms, you know, racism and so on, is actually pretty rare these days. I think there's still some sort of under the radar stuff that's perhaps not got an overt intent to marginalise somebody, but just a kind of ignorance does so. There's clearly still some examples of that. I think really what it underlined was, and it was interesting that it picked up on the social class bit as well as just the kind of really obvious things around racism and misogyny and so on. I think that was interesting. It didn't go into loads of depth about that, but the stuff we were talking about earlier, really, about the sort of social elitism, I think is a really interesting thing to look at. I think there's some ways that cricket still operates itself in terms of its sort of transparency and its processes and so on, which don't really underline some of the things that the report was aspiring to. You know, just the way that kind of some things are commissioned and some decisions are made, and those who've got a sort of public sector background, where perhaps it's kind of too far at the other extreme, you know, where we've got kind of too much red tape and too much too many things that we have to work through, we'll probably be gobsmacked at the way that some governing bodies in what we're talking about now, cricket, kind of works in terms of its the way it makes decisions on certain things. But it's obviously still reasonably recent, so you've got to give the people time to see whether they can implement some of the recommendations of it. I think the recommendations were pretty clear. The ECB's given some funding out to five charities, which I'm sure you're aware of, who all do great work. Mm. We weren't one of those charities, but then I understand kind of why. You know, they work nationally and we work regionally. And of course, if anybody thinks that the ECB has been sort of elitist, or socially elite, then giving money to a charity that just works in London wouldn't kind of help that cause. You know, it's going to make it look worse, if anything. So I can understand that. There's some interesting things happening as well. So there's an initiative called Cricket for London, which is in the early stages, but it's about the four London counties kind of working together better. And that's really our drive, to be honest with you. If I could wave a magic wand, then platform cricket would be making a sort of consistent minimum offer to all young Londoners. You know, there is a chance at some point during your youth, during your academic life, for you to get into a pathway. Obviously, I don't mean a talent pathway, but kind of from a school session, you're going to get a positive experience of cricket, and there's going to be some clarity about where you can then go on to get your kind of first taste of community cricket and continue in that if that's something you want to do. So I hope at some point we do get some support from the ECB or at least the kind of four London counties through this Cricket for London initiative to do that. Because there's still a nice chance of Shine, which is obviously the other kind of major schools programme. They have funding, I think, for about 25% of schools nationally usually. So there's still great big gaps in London boroughs where the chance of Shine through the county boards doesn't touch. So I think there's room for us to kind of work alongside them and just make sure that you know, this kind of equal coverage and as I say, all kids get an opportunity to jump on the ladder.
What are some of the success stories you've seen so far?
Well, so Platform Cricket is only 5 years old, so there's nobody yet who's kind of got on into the kind of professional ranks. But as I say, it was born out of a very similar program that we were just running in Tower Hamlets in East London. And we've had a couple of guys from that program who've gone on to play professional cricket. There was a lad called Dipan Paul who got on the MCC Young Cricketers program and unfortunately had a knee injury, so wasn't able to kind of stay with that, but a very talented boy who was, picked up through this program. And there's a lad who's recently signed for Kent called Arafat Boyan, who he signed professional terms last year, but he's probably in his mid-20s now. So he, certainly the sort of the final refinement of him wasn't anything we could lay claim to, but getting him helping get into kind of good levels of club cricket was something we did, because I think that's the other part that we haven't actually touched on in this conversation. There's a lot of community cricket initiatives and leagues and programs and cups and stuff that happen Sundays in midweek that's kind of sort of non-traditional kind of BCB Premier League sort of stuff, which obviously has great positives in terms of getting people playing. It's got great positives in kind of using spaces better that perhaps weren't well used for cricket before. There's a danger, though, I think, that it kind of dilutes or sort of diverts talented players away from where they get exposed to the best cricket. And I've seen some of this in my professional life in football, actually. I think that one of the reasons that we don't have the number of professional footballers from a South Asian background that we should have in this country is because they're around urban areas in particular, there's a lot of young people from South Asian backgrounds who play in, they're not exclusive anyway, but they tend to be only other kind of South Asian kids who play in the kind of leagues in those sorts of areas. And of course, if you're not week in, week out, being exposed to playing against the best quality you can, you're not going to develop quite as well as you could do. So I think that we need to be, well, cricket, it's not really my responsibility now, but the ECB needs to be mindful that there's got to be a real balance, that if these some of these competitions and so on become more interesting, more lucrative even for kids to go and play, and instead of playing what we might call kind of old-fashioned kind of league cricket on Saturdays, it's not going to do anybody any good. People at counties, if they've got the resources, should be going out and seeing what kind of talent they could unearth in some of these areas. I think probably we're still at a point where anybody who's dominating a cup or a league, you know, that's kind of more in one ethnic minority, you know, a kind of West Indian team or an Afghan team or whatever it might be, I think they're probably still playing good league cricket on a Saturday, actually, and it's just something they're doing on the side. But as I say, if it comes to take over, I think we've got a problem because you're going to have kind of two rival systems that are diluting the whole thing.
This show is brought to you by HCL Tech, the leaders in data and technology and partnerships. And so they've formed a partnership with us and also the Australian cricket team. Yeah, rather than one. I mean, you ideally, you want everyone to be working towards the same goal in all those different teams as well, whereas that's not quite what those two different things are doing at the moment.
Exactly.
I'm going to tell you my success story for Platform without knowing too much about your overall thing. But, you know, I came over to the UK 15 years ago, and I've only ever played cricket in London. And the vast majority of the places I played, I know this is going to sound stupid, but they have very high fences.
Okay.
And so most clubs, it's actually almost impossible to see cricket played anywhere.
Yeah.
Right? Like the places you see are the old village central greens that are very rare in London now, but there's still a few of them out there.
Yeah.
And that are public schools, the big posh schools quite often have open space. So you can see cricket in those places.
Yeah.
And as I said, I took my children to some of your sessions, and it was in Crystal Palace Park. Mm-hmm. So, you know, big, massive, famous park, and it was in the middle. And all the kids were having lots of fun. And this family was walking past, And as the family walked past, they saw cricket being played and they asked if their children could get involved.
Yeah.
And it's so rare that I ever saw that. And yet when I was growing up playing cricket, and I'm sure like vast majority of the people listening to this, you know, with Asian backgrounds, Australian, New Zealand backgrounds, like you can walk past people playing cricket so regularly, you know, during that time of the year, that you just walk over and go, you know, the amount of times we would be training and a father would bring his son over and go, can my boy have a go here?
Yeah.
And in England, it's almost restricted. And the fact that you guys were just using a public park allowed this random family with no cricket background. I could hear the father asking things about cricket to try and work out. And these kids just got involved and, you know, stay for the next few weeks. And they're probably not going to play for Surrey or Kent or Middlesex or any of these things. We're not mad. We don't think that that's what will happen. But they will have played cricket and they're more likely to know something about cricket, to go and watch cricket when they're older, you know, to understand it. And it does feel to me that that is the success where you've had it at the moment. The schools thing is incredible, but it's that ability to actually show that cricket is just a fun thing that you can play in a park with a bunch of kids that for me feels like that's the direction that cricket should be going in the UK rather than behind these high fences.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's great to hear, you know, and I think, again, that's probably born out of our experiences of doing things in Tower Hamlets. And I think everything you've just said, our approach to that was that it was going to be an uphill task to keep a young person from, you know, that was living in poverty. I mean, in those days as well, we had different immigration rules to what we have now. We had a lot of young people coming over here as kind of unaccompanied minors who were kind of living with either in care or whether that be official care or unofficial care, where it was going to be difficult to kind of keep involved. So our attitude was, if we can just give these guys a positive experience of sport, and in this case cricket, then the very least you're going to do is have parents in 10, 20, 30 years' time who've got a different attitude towards getting their kids involved than perhaps their parents or their carers have done now. And again, that's not necessarily criticism. You know, as I say, when people are kind of at the thin end of the wedge, you know, they've got other priorities other than sport. That's a really pleasing story. I'm glad you said that. Thank you.
No worries. Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast and all the work that you do, and good luck in the future.
Thank you very much. Cheers, Charlie.
Thanks for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are many other extras as well, including a Discord channel. There's a link to those in the show notes. Please review, subscribe, and tell all your friends about our show. Word of mouth is the best way of making our podcast grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bharat Sundaresan and Bayram Kazi. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston. Each episode is produced by Ishit Kuberka at Sound Potion Studio. The team from 42 help us out with the video side. Orajoti Saina Payan and Maida Akam, both producing podcasts, while Mukunda Bandredi is the head of our YouTube content. If you are a podcaster who happens to waffle on and you need a way to cut down your long-form content, Memento FM is here to save the day. They turn your lengthy media into bite-sized chunks for even the most time-starved audience. Start using Memento FM today.